WBOI Presents In Session is a series where we'll hear from teachers, educators, and experts on all sorts of topics, sharing their lessons in the WBOI studios. As part of our commitment to lifelong learning, In Session gives us the opportunity to partner with those who have something to teach us. During this episode, we'll hear from Colette Feehan, a PhD candidate at IU, on the topic of voice acting. Thank you for listening. Comic-Con. Defined as a gathering of nerds at convention centers or other venues big enough to accommodate thousands upon thousands of fans and consumers of popular media of all kinds, people cosplay as their favorite characters, buy merchandise of all sorts of shapes and sizes, hear from and meet the stars and creators that bring the stories we love to life, and in many cases, we also sit in on panels and other sessions that inform the audience about topics that are in some ways comics adjacent. That last activity is how I met my next guest. Colette Feehan, welcome.
I'm so excited to be here. This is amazing.
Now, to clarify, despite the wonderful impression you just did, I am not in the studio with a small child. I am in the studio with a PhD candidate from IU, but I will let you tell a little bit more about yourself and your work for our audience to get started. Colette Feehan, welcome.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. So first of all, I want to clarify that I am an amateur voice actor at best. I don't usually perform the voices, but that is what my research is about. So I'm, like you said, a PhD candidate at Indiana University in Bloomington. I've always really been interested in cartoons and voice acting, really for as long as I can remember. And I would always imitate the voices every time I heard them, from Blue's Clues to Carl Weezer on Jimmy Neutron. And I especially liked imitating noises that, like, animal characters would make or instruments.
I know for me, the gateway to loving all things voice acting is, of course, yeah, the cartoons that you grow up on. Then eventually realizing just what a range Mark Hamill has. The fact that the actor who brought to life Luke Skywalker also has quite possibly the most iconic Joker voice of all time, and his list of voice acting credits goes on from there. And it is in the spirit of spectacular self-indulgence, as I have been a fan of voice actors for many, many years. This is WBOI Presents In Session. Our guest instructor is Colette Feehan, and this episode is Voice Acting, Lesson 1. I want to set up your work. I recall one voice actor talking about the mechanics of what it takes to do this. I think it was Phil LaMarr, professional voice actor, most well known for Samurai Jack, Justice League. He's been everywhere. And he said he was once asked to do another take of a character but sound angrier. And when it was played back, it sounded the same. He had just made an angry face. So what are some of the basics that you could coach an amateur voice actor on that could give them more control over their voice? And I suspect this will be the first of many mechanical rabbit holes we go down.
Yeah, so basically if I've learned anything from my dissertation research, it's that a person does not do the exact same thing to get the same effect as someone else. So for me to sound like a little kid, I do something totally different with my vocal tract from what another actor might do. There are a lot of possible explanations for why this is. First of all, everyone is shaped differently. We all talk differently to an extent, so to alter the way we speak, we also have to alter it differently. But if you ask actors to explain what they're doing, they'll usually say something similar like, well, I squish here and point to vaguely their face or their throat, or well, I expand here and point to their throat, or they'll just say something like, I don't know, I just make it nasally. The way that people do things has to be different because we're shaped differently. But also, your face isn't separate from your vocal tract. So it makes sense for someone to say, well, I just made an angry face to sound angrier, because that's part of how everyone sounds angry when their face is angry.
So you have gone through and compared some tests you've run on yourself to professional voice actors. But before we get to the comparisons, we should talk about how the data has been gathered. What does the gathering of data look like in terms of when it comes to taking a scan or an image of someone's face or throat or just everything that is involved in speaking and changing your voice. I think our listeners would likely be familiar with the image you might see on an X-ray or an MRI, but what is the technology you are using and what do these images wind up looking like?
What I'm using is 3D, 4D ultrasound, which sounds a little bit confusing. So basically, we have this really, really fancy and very expensive ultrasound probe that records in three dimensions. And we can put it underneath your chin, and it shows an ultrasound of your tongue, which, you know, is a very messy image. It takes a lot of experience to sort of be able to interpret these things, just like, you know, sometimes you see an ultrasound of someone's baby, and you're like, maybe there's a baby in there. And then what we can do is sync it with a time dimension, which is that fourth dimension. That's what I mean by 4D ultrasound. And we can basically make a movie of what the tongue is doing in real time, or more or less real time.
So when we started off and you did your child's voice, thanks to this 4D ultrasound technology, what are you doing or what are you changing when you do that voice, and what was using the 4D ultrasound able to tell you?
So the way ultrasound works is it sends really high frequency noise that we can't hear through the tissue, and it travels really well through a medium or a substance that's pretty uniform. So while it's going through your muscles, it travels pretty fast. And then the second it hits the air that's right above your tongue, the signal sort of scatters and bounces back, and the ultrasound reads the time it took to get there and back as an image. One thing about that is the ultrasound can't go through things like bone. So it can't go through your jaw, and it can't go through, there's this little bone in your neck, sort of by the base of your tongue, and so it can't go through that bone. When I do the kid voice, I end up raising that bone, which means I'm probably also raising my whole larynx, and basically just making my entire vocal tract shorter. And you can see that bone in the ultrasound image because it totally wipes out all of the image on the other side of it. It just turns into this big shadow. Another thing that I can see in my data is the placement of my tongue is different in the child condition. Where your tongue touches the roof of your mouth when you make like a G sound, like a G sound, the place where my tongue is touching the roof of my mouth is pushed a little bit farther forward when I'm imitating the kid voice. So I'm basically making my whole oral cavity a little bit smaller by doing that as well.
Even as you were explaining that, I almost could hear your voice getting higher as you were explaining some of the mechanics. But you mentioned earlier on that not everyone does this the same way. And since when we first met at Indiana Comic Con this past September, you have been collecting data. You even collected some data at Indiana Comic Con, if I recall. So who have you collected data from that you can share? What have been some of the comparisons you've been able to make between an amateur voice actor and a professional?
I have given my participants the option to sign a non-anonymity clause, which means that I could give them credit for the work that they did for the study. So I have data from Veronica Taylor, who is the original Ash Ketchum in the English dub from Pokemon. And I've also imaged Todd Haberkorn, who is also very big in the anime scene. I've also collected from one more amateur actor. Basically, what I've found is there really isn't any consistent strategy. Being a professional, the two professionals didn't do similar things, the two amateurs didn't do similar things, and it's also not based by gender. The two women didn't do similar things, and the two men didn't do similar things. It seems like this is truly a very idiosyncratic process, which might make sense based on the fact that it's something that really only a small percent of people discover they can do. I had one professional voice actor once, I asked them, so what would you tell someone who wanted to become an actor, a voice actor? How should they go about learning how to do voices? And they just looked at me and said, well, to be a good voice actor, you just kind of have to be a good voice actor. To just be a good voice actor is the most exciting thing to hear if you're trying to learn a new skill. And that's sort of where my research is trying to come in and fill a gap. So I am doing a linguistics PhD, and this project definitely tells us a lot about linguistics. It tells us more about, you know, what muscles we have volitional control over. It tells us more about how the vocal tract works. A lot of people are surprised to hear that we're actually not super sure how it works, because the technology to directly view what's going on in there hasn't existed for a long time. I want this research to be used in a more educational way for just learning how the vocal tract works and adding to the body of literature of how the vocal tract works. I also want this research to be available to the vocal performance community, and maybe this research could go into forming a basis of some sort of pedagogy to be able to teach voice acting instead of just saying, well, imitate it till you get it. You're a good voice actor if you are a good voice actor.
That imitate it till you get it point is definitely something that I know I'm, again, thinking back to my childhood growing up and trying to imitate everybody from Batman to now. These days, it's a lot of NPR voices, a lot of Robert Siegel and Jack Spear. So if you're an amateur, really your best option is to try to emulate the professionals who might be doing something completely different from you, which is why I can definitely see that the research you're doing would be very helpful for, of course, again, the scientific community or an amateur voice actor trying to figure out just how all this works. How did you go about testing amateur and professional voice actors? Like, you didn't just have like specific scripts, read this or do that and let's compare. You broke it down when you mentioned that G sound, the G sound earlier. You had to break it down to syllables and vowel sounds, consonant sounds, right?
Yeah, so I have two tasks for them, basically. So I have them reading a list of syllables with different, what we call onset consonants. Basically, ka, ki, ku, ta, ti, tu, cha, chi, chu, and so on. And that really gives me a clear image of sort of where in the vocal tract space they're pronouncing things. But then I also had them read two short stories so that I could look at if running speech, you know, how running speech changes the way that is pronounced, and also just to get more tokens. Because in addition to looking at the ultrasound images, I can also just take the audio and run a bunch of different acoustic tests and get information from that as well.
I feel like we covered the ultrasound side of things really well. How does the audio analysis side of things go in, speaking as a complete audio nerd in asking that?
There are a bunch of different things that we can get from just the audio. Part of what makes this study pretty robust is we can sort of use it as a feedback loop. We observe something in the ultrasound. Okay, well, can we see that in the acoustics? Do they match up? If they don't match up, then we have something new to look at. So with the acoustics, for example, one thing that I can do is I can pull out certain parts of the audio, put it into a bunch of algorithms, and estimate how long a person's vocal tract is while they're talking. So that can tie into, well, are they indeed shortening their whole vocal tract, or are they just moving their hyoid bone around? Another thing that I can do is, so this might get a little bit technical, so every vowel, the reason we hear different vowels as different vowels is a combination of, you know, your vocal folds are moving, creating a sound, but then above that, you've got your whole vocal tract moving around and making different configurations to become that vowel sound. Maybe to help conceptualize that, if you make an E sound, think about where your tongue is during that E sound. E, 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 E. And then say ooh, 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 ooh. And then go back and forth and think about where your tongue is moving to for each of those sounds. E, ooh, E, ooh, E, ooh. You can try that if you want.
E, 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 ooh, ooh, ooh. It's difficult for me to put into words, but again, when I sat in on your presentation down at Indiana Comic Con, you did start out with the anatomy side of things and having to understand just everything that is going on here. You mentioned the hyoid bone, and I don't think I could point to that on a chart. But then you ended with exercises for the audience. So putting myself kind of at your mercy here, what are some of the different ways to test what kind of voices you might be able to do and different ways for a layman to detect what their mouth and this whole apparatus is doing?
Yeah, so a lot of it is just, you know, you've been talking nearly your entire life and no one's ever asked you pay attention to where your tongue is, right? That's not a very common task to have foisted upon you.
Outside of foreign language classes, yes.
Yes, maybe in a foreign language class, you know, the how do you make that French E? You make a E sound and then round your lips. Maybe I just helped someone in their French class, but That's a big part of what linguistics is. It's sort of like the psychology of language in that, you know, psychology, some people say it's just, you know, noticing behavior. You just have to pay attention to the behavior. Whereas linguistics is, well, you just have to notice the behavior, pay attention to what they're doing and how they're sounding, and especially what you're doing yourself. So another really distinct difference is if you go ta-ta-ta-ta-ta.
Ta-ta-ta-ta-ta.
And then you go ka-ka-ka-ka-ka.
Ka 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 ka.
So your tongue is really far forward in your mouth, and the place where the tongue is actually touching the roof of your mouth is towards the front with the T, right? Ta ta ta.
Ta ta ta. Yeah.
And then it's toward the back of your mouth in the ka 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 ka.
Ka ka. It is. Yeah. Absolutely.
And then you can think about maybe put your fingers on your throat and then just go up and down your vocal range. Something like that.
I'm gonna have to apologize to our listeners on that one. Oh my word.
But you can sort of feel it moving up and down, right?
Yes. getting past the laughter, yes, absolutely.
That's a big part of voice acting in itself too. It's just being willing to be totally ridiculous. You know, you have to tolerate a certain level of ridiculousness. If, you know, you're in your profession, you're going to go into a recording booth and someone's going to genuinely ask you to sound like a sheep that farts a lot or something.
So earlier in our conversation, I referenced Mark Hamill, Joker being one side of the equation, Batman, of course, is the other. And growing up, I immensely enjoyed Kevin Conroy. So when you have a character voice and you are trying to change your voice in one way or another, putting your finger on your throat or paying attention to where your tongue is, these are things that a layman can do when they're doing a character voice.
Yeah, definitely. And there are so many other aspects that we haven't exactly touched on. I mean, you can play around with how tensely or taut you're holding your cheeks. You can squish them in, or you can blow them out a little bit, or you can change something that we call voice quality. So what I'm talking, the way I'm talking right now is what we call modal voice. Or I can go into a creaky voice, which is sort of like Raven from Teen Titans. Or you can go into a breathy voice. And there are all these different things that are, you know, not necessarily just the anatomy that you can manipulate. Or, for example, doing characters of different genders also has, you know, you do similar things for it, but change it a little bit. And even my research isn't quite there to be able to explain it.
So, like, I can do a little kid that's a girl, or I can do a little boy, too.
But I don't really know how to explain. The voice quality is a little bit different, but it also feels a little bit different. And I would need to go back into the ultrasound to sort of try and figure that out.
The many voices of Colette Feehan, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much for having me. I've really enjoyed it.
And thank you for listening to WBOI Presents In Session. You can find more episodes of WBOI Presents In Session at WBOI.org. And while you're there, you can find the very latest from the WBOI news team and stay up to date on content we produce year-round. Our theme music is by Noah Campodonico. Our web producer is Loyal Vandenberg. Our production assistants are Monica Blankenship and Michaela Velto. Thank you for listening. From WBOI, Fort Wayne.